It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
No peace, no paycheck, no peace, no paycheck.
Wow, we are officially in the midst of the longest government shutdown in U.S. history, 21 days and counting. And as Donald Trump refuses to back down from his demand that U.S. taxpayers fund his border wall, which he promised Mexico would pay for, and as Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, refuses to bring the House passed bills reopening the government to the floor without Donald Trump's permission, it's everyday Americans across the country who are suffering. On Friday, more than 800,000 workers missed their first paycheck. And some of those employees have been furloughed, so they're working without pay. And with no end to the Trump shutdown in sight, thousands across the country are dealing with the harsh reality of not knowing when their next paycheck will come.
On Monday, is our first paycheck that we're going to miss. And that's going to hit us hard.
I'm 45 years old, and I shouldn't have to pawn my belongings to pay for medication when I do have a job. I'm just not able to do that job.
It's not easy to go to bed thinking where are you going to get money, you know? We're having to ration what cash we have so that we can pay those bills at the end of the month.
Sandy Rios with you. That was last Friday. That was Joy Reid on MSNBC. The shutdown is actually in day 24, but you see how this goes. It's Trump's border wall, his border wall. Nothing to do with the American people, nothing to do with let's just select one category, the people who've lost their children, their loved ones at the hands of illegal immigrant criminals. That's not important because, well, Monday we won't receive a paycheck. And I'm going to have to pawn things to get my medicine. All right, so here's the thing. Here's the thing. Obviously, no one wants government workers working for nothing or not getting their paychecks. That is difficult, no question about it. But here's the other thing. Keep in mind that the worst possible scenarios, many of them made up, how could anyone be in that much of a crisis when Friday or today is the first day they've missed their paycheck? They're going to have to pawn something to pay for their medicine today? Really? The exaggerations, you can expect more and more of them. And of course, Joy Reid was happy to lay them out. There was a march in Washington led by various union members. And Tony Reardon, who's the head of the National Treasury Employees Union, was at the rally. And I just thought you might like to hear what happened there.
I applaud you and everyone who is rallying around the country, standing up and demanding that you be treated fairly. We have a message. We're fed up. 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 We're fed up.
Here's the thing. I understand people being upset about not getting a paycheck, and I can imagine myself protesting in some form or fashion. That is the American way. But were they fed up when they look at all the drugs coming across the border and they see their own children, and they certainly complain about it, about the fentanyl crisis that we have, the heroin crisis, the drug crisis? They certainly complain about that, but the thing that really upsets them is not receiving a paycheck. Where were they when Kate Steinle was murdered on the pier in San Francisco? When all the other cases of criminal activity, the rapes, the murders, the MS-13 gangs, I could tell you a lot more stories today about things that have been happening. Why aren't they fed up about that? That's why it makes no sense. And so what's happening, of course, is that the people are being stirred up. It's only 25% of government that's shut down. And for those at 25%, we know it's a hard time, but the Congress, I believe it was the Senate for sure, passed a bill assuring them that they will not lose pay. They'll get back pay. So this is really kind of a paid vacation. So Senator Hirano was also at that rally on Friday, and this is what she had to say.
Aloha, everybody. Okay, how many of you think that the president is on our side? No. So we know that he has federal workers and unions as big fat targets, because federal workers, he tried to freeze your pay. He's made it hard for unions to organize and stay organized. And now he's shutting you all out from your jobs so that he can get his vanity wall. There are two people who can end this shutdown right now. One is the president. But you know what? He is an amoral hostage taker. Amoral because he makes no difference between right and wrong, nor does he give a rip. And he's a hostage taker because he has taken 800,000 federal employees and thousands of contractors hostage. And we don't negotiate with amoral hostage takers.
Senator Hirano, such a champion as she was during the hearings for, the last Supreme Court nominee, Kavanaugh. She was terrible in that, remember? Where did she come from, and how do people like that get elected? And could I just say that there was a time when federal employees were not unionized. There was also a time when federal workers were respected. They were a moderately strong group, but they weren't overwhelmingly hired. So the government has just become bloated. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of federal workers. And that's part of the problem. Of course, living in D.C., most of them receive salaries that you'll never see where you live around the country, supported by your tax dollars. And then most of them, I have to say, this is probably not true in the center of the nation, but it's true certainly in Washington, D.C., in the city centers. The vast majority of federal workers are Democratic supporters. And of course, it's a happy little thing. It happens in states, too, where unionized workers pay, you know, put money into reelection campaigns, and then the candidates that are elected, which are generally Democrats, turn around and, you know, increase their salaries and increase their pensions. You see how this works? It's happened, I tell you, in the state of Illinois. They have destroyed the state of Illinois with these cozy deals with unions. And I'm sure you could tell more stories about that, but this is what we're seeing nationally. So this is what's happening. Not that there's no sympathy for government workers, because I do have sympathy for that. There are some that probably are going to be, it's going to be a tough time for them, but they will get their money in due time. And by the way, according to one article I read in the Wall Street Journal, some of these government workers are already, you know, looking to banks, credit unions, and mortgage companies to sort of soften the blow here. Some businesses are offering no-interest loans. Federal and state financial regulators, in a Friday joint statement, encouraged financial institutions to work with affected customers who may face temporary hardships in making payments on debts such as mortgages, student loans, car loans, business loans, or credit cards. So steps are being taken to help ease the burden on federal workers. And according to the Wall Street Journal, also, the newly elected House Democrats, and there was an article on this last week, but they continue to be frustrated by their leadership. Elisa Slotkin, she is a Michigan lawmaker. She was with the CIA. She's one of those that was elected who, you know, was recruited by the left to run. But this is what she said. There's a number of us on the Democratic side who are quite concerned that we're not working on negotiated positions and taking the bull by the horns and trying to think about what it would look like. That's her concern. And of course, there are other quotes in that particular article. But how are Democrats responding to this emergency situation? The president is in D.C. continuing to issue not pleas, I would just offers to negotiate, offers to negotiate. Well, where are Republicans, Democrats? This is where they are. Rob Schmidt, at least 30 of them. Rob Schmidt reports from Puerto Rico. Let's listen.
There's 30 plus Democrats, more than 30 down here, with their entire families. It's more than 100 people. They're put up in this fancy hotel behind me. The buses are lined up right now. They're going to take them probably to breakfast and out for the day. This is a winter retreat by a Democratic Political Action Committee. They're lobbying for more money and more attention for this island territory of the United States that has really been through the ringer the last number of years. Puerto Rico is debt-ridden, has been for a lot of years, and then they had that hurricane in 2017, September, Maria, which just decimated this island and caused tens of billions of dollars in damage, and that just made everything so much worse. Today, this group of Democrats will be lobbied some more by a Latino Political Action Committee, and then they're going to meet with local leaders. There's a lot of anger here over this federal oversight program that was implemented to help this island live within its means and slash a lot of the welfare programs. They've been spending way more than they bring in here on this island. And the local politicians also are trying to get more money from the federal government for disaster relief, and they want more control of that money after the hurricane. They want to be able to decide how it gets spent and not have that oversight. But of course, there is plenty of leisure time. The favorite photo of the day, Senator Bob Menendez, with a nice golden tan in January on the beach here in San Juan, very much enjoying himself. As I said, they got to bring the families down. It's kind of a work play trip, but the optics of it aren't that good. Hamilton, the show Hamilton, very popular. They have they brought a show down here, a special performance that they did on Sunday. All the Democrats went to see that, and then they got to party with the cast afterwards, and they paid for their own tickets, we understand. Here's a couple of tweets. Sarah Sanders: Democrats in Congress are so alarmed about federal workers not getting paid, they're partying on the beach instead of negotiating a compromise to reopen the government and secure the border. Ronna McDaniel, the GOP chair: Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are not negotiating in good faith with real Donald Trump. Instead, congressional Democrats spent the weekend on the beach with lobbyists. It's time to get back to work in Washington, secure our border, reopen the government.
Yeah, you have to stop and think about that. While they parade people who they allege are already suffering, having to, you know, pawn things to buy their medicine. And the Democrats are so concerned about this. It's just terrible what's happening to federal workers. They fly off to Puerto Rico with their families for this trip. The resort where they're staying is $429 a night. Of course, they went to see, as you heard, the performance of Hamilton. The tickets from that night range from $10 to $5,000, according to the Associated Press. Partying with the cast, along with 109 lobbyists and corporate executives, among them Washington firms R.J. Reynolds, Facebook, Comcast, Amazon, Pharma, Microsoft, Intel, Verizon, and the National Education Association, suffering on the beach of Puerto Rico. Of course, the claim is that they're down there to help Puerto Rican people. And you heard Rob just describe the fact that the Puerto Rican government has so misspent the money that they have taken in and certainly received from federal support, American federal support, United States federal support, but they don't want oversight. They want to decide how they're going to spend that money. So we see already with this group of Democrats flying down and lying on the beach during the shutdown, about which they're so concerned about federal workers, that they go to Puerto Rico to this expensive resort and lay on the beach. That's how concerned they are. And we see how Puerto Rico spends its money. Because they're paying, as far as I can understand, I think it's the Puerto Rican government who are paying for a lot of this. So this is how this goes. And, of course, the president's upset about it. Sarah Huckabee Sanders tweeted, Democrats in Congress are so alarmed about federal workers not getting paid, they're partying on the beach instead of negotiating a compromise to reopen the government and secure the border. And so you see how it goes. This is how it goes. I really don't know what to say. There's more to say about it. I'll tell you more when we come back. I'm also going to be talking about the situation with Ruth Bader Ginsburg and what's happening, the ear-to-the-ground reports on what's going on with that. Plus, I want to talk to you about the New York Times and Washington Post reports that the FBI actually opened a counterintelligence investigation into President Trump to see whether he really was kind of an undercover operative for Vladimir Putin. Yeah, they did that. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing, he had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The folks in charge of Nabisco have decided to set free the lion, gorilla, giraffe, and zebra, announcing they will no longer sell their beloved animal crackers in boxes that look like cages, ending a packaging design that dates back 116 years. Instead, the exotic creatures will roam free among the grass and the trees. You can blame the politically correct makeover on People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. They've been badgering Nabisco for more than 2 years about the packaging. PETA said the cookie company's decision reflects that society no longer tolerates the caging and chaining of wild animals for circus shows. The cookies, named after the famed showman P.T. Barnum, Nabisco says the name will not change. All of this controversy over a box of cookies. Cookies! I just feel bad for the 2-year-old who bites off the head of a giraffe. Don't be surprised if PETA files animal cruelty charges. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
It's going to affect us when it comes to mortgages, paying rent, daycare, even food, gas, everything.
I am a basket case. I literally don't know how I'm going to provide for my kids.
I've been a Trump supporter. I think he's done a lot of wonderful things, but this is not one of them.
Does this change your mind about how you feel
about president?
Yes.
Well, specific to this issue, yes.
It's easy for people like that last gentleman to say, I want a wall,
right?
And then if you find out, oh, I'm paying for the wall with my job.
Different thing. After what we learned yesterday, maybe Russia should pay for the wall at this point, because,
yeah.
I mean, that's who's benefiting from this administration more than the average American person.
All right. So that was Joy Reid again, and that was her guest saying, of course, Russia should pay for the wall because they benefited more than any other country, et cetera, et cetera. Sandy Rios, back with you. You see how this goes. So they repeat, the mainstream media repeats the Russia connection every chance they get. Even the wall, even the Washington Post did an article kind of dissecting what we know now about Russia's alleged influence in our election. And it's amazing how the claims, even in the Washington Post, they show that really there is no evidence They did some broad advertising, but not to help any particular candidate. They didn't target specific groups of people, which is what has been alleged. And so really, honestly, there's just nothing there. And I think the reason that the Washington Post and the New York Times now are going into this flurry of reporting is because the Mueller report is getting ready to come out, and you're going to see if indeed enough of it's unclassified, we're going to see that really there is no there. And I'll make my point here as clearly as I can. On Friday, the New York Times wrote an article called "The FBI Opened Inquiry into Whether Trump Was Secretly Working on Behalf of Russia." And following that, the Washington Post did another article in which they claim that the FBI opened up a counterterrorism investigation on President Trump. See, we haven't known that before. We haven't known that. And when you look at the timeline, they opened the investigation right after he fired James Comey. The FBI opened a secret investigation on President Trump on whether he was actually an agent of Russia working with Putin after he hired James Comey. And I want to read to you just a little bit. The reason we know about that is because of an exchange between James Baker, who was the former attorney at the FBI. He did a behind closed doors session with Congress, and some of that's been leaked. Of course, naturally, things get leaked in Washington. And so he basically says in this interview with Congress that in May of 2017, political bias infected senior FBI leadership, and emotion, not evidence, drove their decision making. So they sick the dogs on President Trump because of their emotional reprehension, their dislike of him. Most of them were Hillary Clinton supporters. We know that from the text between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, and the actions of Andrew McCabe and fill in the blanks. James Comey also. Chris Wallace brought this up with Lindsey Graham yesterday on Fox News Sunday. Let's just listen to this short exchange.
The New York Times now reports that after President Trump fired FBI Director James Comey, that the Bureau opened up a counterintelligence investigation into whether or not the President of the United States was working on behalf of the Russians. One, did you know about that? Two, what do you think of, I have to say, it's an astonishing idea, the FBI, the Bureau, investigating whether the President was a Russian agent.
Well, number one, that story came from somebody who leaked it with an agenda. So I'd like to know who leaked it, because they have an agenda not very friendly to President Trump. And I, for one, don't trust what I read in the New York Times. Having said all that, I'm going to ask the FBI director, was there a counterintelligence investigation opened up regarding the president as being a potential agent of the Russians? I find it astonishing. And to me, it tells me a lot about the people running the FBI, McCabe and that crowd. I don't trust them as far as I throw them. So if this really did happen, Congress needs to know about it. And what I want to do is make sure, how could the FBI do that? What kind of checks and balances are there?
I agree with Lindsey Graham. In fact, Newt Gingrich does also. He did a great article for Fox News. I'm going to read a bit of it to you. The extraordinary story published Friday night in the New York Times headlined "FBI Opened Inquiry into Whether Trump Was Secretly Working on Behalf of Russia" tells us how deeply sick the Washington establishment has become. A group of bureaucrats elected by no one sat in a room and decided that they would investigate the new president of the United States for possible treason. Let me repeat, treason. This is, after all, the implication of this investigation. This group of bureaucrats reports to no one in elected authority in a Justice Department where employees gave 97% of their presidential campaign contributions to Hillary Clinton. The hostility toward and fear of newly elected President Trump was deep. Senior members of Justice Department, all promoted under the Obama administration, were clearly prepared to go all out to repudiate the verdict of the American people in the 2016 election. And could I just interject that remember that Peter Strzok and Lisa Page exchanged email telling us just how much the FBI leadership hated President Trump and how they had an insurance policy. Now that he was elected, they had an insurance policy. It looks as though Robert Mueller was their insurance policy. And also, Judicial Watch is reporting that we know from their email, their text exchange, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, that President Obama knew all about this. Remember Lisa Page saying in a text that we have to brief POTUS on this? He wants to know everything? You remember that? Okay, let me go back to Newt Gingrich's article. Furthermore, these were Justice Department bureaucrats who had ignored the Clinton Foundation scandals, minimized the investigation into the Clinton email and internet scandal, and ignored former President Clinton collecting money from Russians overseas while his wife was Secretary of State. Suddenly, these hitherto passive, dispassionate, and intolerant law enforcement bureaucrats were galvanized into investigating a president for possible treason. And then he goes on to say, who did they share it with? They shared it with no one. They could have briefed leaders of the Judiciary and Intelligence Committees, but they did none of that. President's former attorney John Dowd said Saturday, the New York Times story is an unwitting disclosure and verification of the utter corruption of their oaths by fired FBI Director James Comey and his colleagues to undermine the free election of the President of the United States. It was apparently done under the supervision of the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, by the way, who was reportedly ready to wear a wire to ensnare President Trump. This is the stuff of banana republics and dictatorships. This despicable, unlawful, official conduct undermines our entire federal criminal justice system, which protects our liberty as a free people. We're going to put that article, that's just part of it, on our Facebook page. It's Newt Gingrich's report on this. And you might also remember that Peter Strzok, in his private texts with his lover Lisa Page, both of them top officials at the FBI, confessed that there's no big there. He was concerned about going to work for the Mueller probe because he didn't really think they had anything at that point on President Trump. And that was at the time when they opened this counterintelligence investigation on him. They had nothing. It's just the emotion and hunches. And it's just not enough to do what they did to a duly elected president of the United States. I have so much more to tell you. I'm going to jump ahead with this. Sidney Powell now. Remember last week I told you about this attorney representing... All right. Special investigator Robert Mueller indicted several Russian companies. Some of them were actually fake companies. And it really was nothing more than trying to prove that he had something. Remember, he did it at a propitious moment, suddenly announcing he had all these indictments, knowing, at least assuming, that these Russian companies would never come to our shores to defend themselves. Allegedly, they interfered with our election. That was a charge. Well, one of them was called Concord, which is a company that doesn't even really exist. I don't know what the entity is, but they decided they would come here and they would actually challenge this charge. So they retained counsel, a guy named Ira Dubayet, and I mentioned him to you last week, of Reed Smith. And I read to you some of the things that Eric had, he'd been fighting in this courtroom. The judge is Dabney Friedrich. And he had been saying that the charges are false charges. There's no crime here. You're alleging crimes that don't exist on paper and they don't even exist. And he's just been sort of mocking, just frustrated, talking about the cabal between Judge Friedrich and Rob Mueller, shutting him out so that he does not know the evidence fully against the company in which he's representing. And he's been very clever. I talked to you about it last week. In fact, if you want to go back and listen to that show, you could do that. But Sidney Powell reveals something really shocking. Why am I shocked? Why should I be shocked? This is her title. How did the wife of a Mueller protege end up hearing Mueller's case? It turns out that Judge Dabney Friedrich's husband is Matthew Friedrich, which is, Sidney says, one of the three villains in her book. Matthew Friedrich is a longtime friend and colleague of Andrew Weissman, who was the lead investigator on the Mueller team, and Robert Mueller. They bonded on the Enron task force. And without going into all that, you will remember that they prosecuted Enron. 80,000 people lost their jobs. They put people in jail. And later, the courts decided there had been absolutely no crime, but the company had been destroyed. This was the work of Andrew Weissman, Robert Mueller, and the husband of Judge Dabney Langhorne Friedrich, Matthew Friedrich. So suddenly now she's assigned to this case to objectively decide whether Bob Mueller has a case against this Russian company. It is unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. Sidney says, if for no other reason than the obvious appearances of serious conflict of interest and bias, Judge Friedrich should recuse herself. Concord is entitled to a vigorous defense, and the case should be heard by a judge who is not a creature of the Deep Lagoon, if there is such a thing in Washington. I wanted you also then to hear, if I have a moment, I don't think I do. I'm going to move ahead with the information because there's an attorney general nominee named Bill Barr. His hearings start tomorrow. I haven't said much to you about him because, quite frankly, I'm not prepared to declare anything. I find myself confused about what I'm hearing here. Initially, we heard how good he is. Of course, we always hear how good he is. But then we found out from Lindsey Graham last week that he's really best friends for 20 years with Bob Mueller. Their wives go to Bible study together, and Bob Mueller attended his daughter's weddings. Now, really? So now this Attorney General Bill Barr, the nominee, is going to be charged with overseeing the Mueller investigation? Now that Rod Rosenstein is stepping down, maybe that's why Rod Rosenstein is stepping down, because he knows who's going to be stepping in. Bill Barr, longtime best friends of Bob Mueller, attended his daughter's weddings. How does this happen? How does this happen? So I think Lindsey Graham released this after a private conversation with Bill Barr. They're sort of thinking it would pacify the Democrats. And maybe it did, but it surely should not have pacified the Republicans. So there's a report now that William Barr may have to recuse himself from special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. Democrats are concerned that Barr prejudged the Mueller investigation in a 20-page memo written in June. But now Republicans are upset because he's too personally close to Mueller. So, you know, more drama in Washington, D.C., go figure. I do think I want you to hear Tom Fitton comment on Fox and Friends this morning because Tom really lays out what's been happening in a really succinct way. Let's listen, clip 7.
It just shows you how out of control the FBI has been. They think that taking personnel action against the FBI director is the same as treason. If you're looking at the deep state, this is what the deep state is. You oppose the bureaucracy, we're going to target you with an illicit investigation. And you know, what's even worse about this, which Times kind of glosses over, is they had already been targeting the president for almost a year. They had the dossier, they had the fake FISA warrants based on the dossier, they had taken up phone records, they had sicked spies on the Trump team to try to make it seem and investigate whether or not the Russians were somehow coordinating with them, and they all came up empty. And so what they're now doing is saying firing James Comey is an indication of treason. I tell you, you know, this is an FBI, at least the leadership level at least, which was rogue. And I frankly don't understand why Director Wray has been so quiet about the misconduct of his predecessor. They could target Trump for firing Comey, but in the days after Comey left, it's pretty clear he had stolen FBI files and leaked them to the New York Times. I don't see any concern within the FBI leadership about what James Comey did. And on top of it, you've got all of this strong evidence that you had the Clinton team coordinating with what they admit to be Russia intelligence. And then you've got the scandal of Uranium One, which had the Russians directly trying to influence decision-making in the Obama administration by giving money personally to the Clinton operation. Where's the investigation there? It shows you that this was all about getting Trump. And I tell you, there needs to be a criminal investigation of the abuse of office here at this point, because given the politics of the individuals involved, like Peter Strzok, you can't just go after someone because you don't like their politics. That's an abuse of law subject to criminal investigation.
Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch. I just thought Tom put it succinctly and sort of there's so many details to this, and I'm sure, you know, as you're doing your regular lives, it's very hard to keep track. It's hard for me to keep track and also to assimilate all of it and make it clear to you. Bottom line, the FBI proceeded to investigate President Trump on two issues. They thought he broke the law when he fired James Comey, that it was a legal case against him. But they also opened a counterterrorism case against him, which is just unbelievable. Counterintelligence. I'm having trouble with my words this morning. Counterintelligence investigation, which is just unbelievable based on no evidence. So dangerous. All right, when we return, there's more. I want to talk to you about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and a little bit more about the wall, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
David. the son of Jesse, just an ordinary giant slayer. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. David's battle with Goliath is an epic drama where the little boy stands in God's power to conquer the Philistine giant. David didn't awaken that morning expecting to slay a giant. He didn't stroll in with an entourage after a rugged mountain range training camp like Rocky and Rocky IV. He was just a regular kid bringing his brothers lunch, but fully confident in God's immeasurable power. Though he saw Goliath, David never acknowledged him as a giant, saying, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine who dared defy the Lord of hosts?" When regular people are fully persuaded, fully confident in God's power, giants fall.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. With the American male under constant attack, the need of the hour is to raise a generation of young men who know what biblical masculinity looks like. That's why I've written my new book, The Boy to Man Book. One father who was reading this book to his son posted this on his Facebook page. Tuesday night, we read our nightly chapter and then we prayed. In our prayer, we asked God specifically for two things, requests that I believed only God could meet. Within 24 hours of our prayer, God not only answered one of those big requests, but he answered both. When I reached for the book and reminded him of what we prayed for just the night before, in his eyes, I could see the realization that Jesus is not some distant star. He hears our prayers, and he is a very real Savior. Praise God for that.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing, he had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is touring the Middle East, addressing regional security challenges and U.S. policy towards them. In Cairo last week, he affirmed America's commitment to Israel and Christians, and its determination to counter those like the Islamic State and the mullahs of Iran who seek to impose worldwide the toxic ideology they call Sharia. Particularly striking was Mr. Pompeo's explicit repudiation of the approach embraced a decade ago by then-President Barack Obama, notably in an address he also made in Cairo. Obama lowballed the threat from ISIS, embraced the Muslim Brotherhood, and engaged and then enriched the Iranian regime. By contrast, President Trump has decisively attacked the Islamic State, denounced the Islamist supremacist ideology, and stopped enabling the Ayatollah's misrule in Tehran. Now Mike Pompeo must forge the regional partnerships needed to finish these jobs. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I want to thank you for your generosity always. Since I have been working at American Family Radio, I can't ever remember a campaign when we did not meet and exceed our goal. And the one for preborn is the same. Our goal was 2,000 free ultrasounds to mothers who find out they're pregnant and are unmarried or don't feel they can keep the baby. These ultrasounds save lives because when moms see the actual image of their baby, they just can't bring themselves to terminate the pregnancy. That happens in 80% of the cases. So guess what you did? Our goal was 2,000. We have now underwritten 2,874 ultrasounds. And that means, 80% of that is a lot. 2,000 babies, at least, that you have likely saved. And so thank you so much, as always, for your generosity, which never ceases to amaze me and to be a blessing, I think, to all of American Family Radio. So thank you so very much. All right. Well, by the way, the March for Life in Washington is this Friday, and we'll be talking about it somehow, some way. I'm not sure what the plan is yet. I have to decide that, but that's happening this Friday. And for those of you who are close enough to go to Washington to march in it, could I just say it's a wonderful event. It is absolutely wonderful. I've gone so many years, absolutely enjoyed it every time, because you're with thousands and thousands of people who really love life. And it's a joyful occasion. It truly is. And so you should go, just to encourage your heart and know that you're part of a huge group of Americans who believe that life is sacred. All right, there's a lot more things to tell you. We talk a lot about propaganda, at least I do, because I'm trying to help you understand so that you can help your children understand that they are being propagandized by media, social media, by news reporting, by Hollywood. It's just amazing. And to think of it is, it's really amazing when you consider that we still have outlets of truth. We have not been completely shut down, like American Family Radio, not yet, and other really fine outlets. You still have them, although they may not be mainstream media. But still, somehow, the American public persists on allowing themselves to be duped by outlandish propaganda. I want to give you an example of that. This is just amazing. I can't hardly describe it, but we'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can actually see it. So this radio station, television station out in Seattle, it's a Fox affiliate. They aired the president's live speech from the Oval Office last week on what's happening at the border. And while the president was speaking, they actually doctored his face so that basically, he's saying something like this. Hopefully, we can rise above partisan politics in order to support national security. And after that, he briefly licked his lips. It was very brief. But what they did was they took his face and pulled the screen so that his face looked longer and fatter. And they inserted like a long segment where he was licking his lips and just looking like some sort of a monster. Perfect. You know, so nothing like the original. And that's what they did. As they aired it live, this is what they did. And then he said, some have suggested a barrier is immoral. Then why do wealthy politicians build walls, fences, and gates around their homes? And the video that Q13 aired, Trump licked his lips for several seconds. And then the guy that did it, the editor, has been fired. Q13 said, this does not meet our editorial standards and would regret if it is seen as portraying the president in a negative light. Wait a second. We regret if it is seen as portraying the president in a negative light. I mean, even that statement is just ludicrous. If it is, really, when you see this, you won't believe it. And so that happened in Seattle during that speech. And how many people know? How many people that watched that actually know it was doctored? You have to see this. We'll put it on our Facebook page. The title is Local TV Station Editor Fired After Network Airs Doctored Video. And so you just have to see that. Meanwhile, in San Diego, there's a television station that's calling CNN out. CNN went to this station and asked for a report. It's an independent station called KUSI. They wanted a local view of the effectiveness of the border wall, but then they decided not to run it. So, according to KUSI, CNN declined their report once they found out that the station's past reports actually outlined the effectiveness of the border wall. KUSI tweeted, Thursday morning, CNN called the KUSI newsroom asking if a reporter could give them a local view of the debate surrounding the border wall and government shutdown. After we informed them about our past reports, they declined to hear from us. So then CNN sent out this information that I got to read their words, that this television station had backed down. Brian Stelter actually reported, at first, KUSI News accused CNN of rejecting an appearance by one of its reporters for political reasons, but now the news director is conceding he didn't really know why the network turned him down. But then, Brian goes on to say, lots of people don't know how newsrooms work. Trump is exploiting that. Last week, my show team interviewed several border reporters from great local papers. Then we realized we didn't have time for the segment. These decisions happen every day for mundane reasons. However, according to KUSI and Cohen, the AP's assertion that the station backed down is completely false. KUSI standing by its story. We are not backing away. The headline from the AP is a fiction, for the issue was never raised. Matt Dornick, CNN's VP of Communications, said in response to Cohen's comment, shocking, thought no one, your motives and complete lack of factual support for your garbage assertion have already been disclosed. Why would anyone expect more from you? Carry on. So you see the war between television outlets. It's just amazing, isn't it, that San Diego has an independent station, KUSI, and that they're reporting that the border has actually done a good thing for San Diego. So that's the fake news, and that's why people just don't even know what the truth is. It really is. CNN fails to report things. They're all one-sided, and then you have this station in Washington State morphing the president into some kind of a creature. It's subtle enough that people wouldn't recognize that unless they understood it, but it was horrible. So some other news on the border wall. Israel, you know, has had a border wall for a long time, and Israel News had a report just yesterday. This time 6 years ago, Israel completed its high-tech border fence with Egypt, marking the start of a transformation in the situation along this restive frontier. With its network radars and cameras, the obstacle, dubbed Hourglass by the Israeli Defense Ministry, issues alerts to Israeli Defense Forces units regarding suspicious movements. The barrier has almost completely stopped the mass movement of illegal migration from Africa. So that was the report, and there's a lot more to that story, but that's enough of it for you to get the gist of it. And so where are we with the wall? Here's the thing. The president is trying to decide whether to declare a national emergency, and I am sure you have heard that he's getting loud screeches from both sides. You mustn't do that. You mustn't do that. It'll set a bad precedent, and then you must do that. You must do that, because we have to stop this, and we have to get around the vacationing Democrats in Puerto Rico who are just refusing to come to any kind of compromise. So he has to declare a national emergency. That's one way. Or they have to find a way to pay for the wall that's outside the use of that's some kind of money that they can actually use. Ted Cruz is doubling down on his efforts to get the money that has been taken from El Chapo. He's the famous drug lord out of Mexico, and he's a gangster, and they have $14 billion that they have confiscated from him. Cruz has reintroduced the Ensuring Lawful Collection of Hidden Assets to Provide Order Act, which is El Chapo. That's the acronym for El Chapo. He's calling it the El Chapo Act in Congress. And there was a great piece, kind of a little video piece done by Daily Caller with Ted Cruz that explains why this would be so effective. We'll put that on our Facebook page, too. Ted Cruz explains how he's going to make El Chapo pay for the border wall. I just think that's brilliant, honestly. I think it's brilliant. I think the president should pay attention to what Senator Cruz is suggesting there. All right. I want to bring you to the Ruth Bader Ginsburg situation. You know that she's been gone now for a long time from the court. And she's not going to be back this week either. So I want to just, what's going on there? I mean, we all wonder about this. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has had cancer twice prior to this. This is her third bout with cancer. They found something cancerous on her lungs. She was operated on in December. It was discovered accidentally. They were operating on her because of a fall that she had. And so she's not back, and we don't know exactly what that means. But this is what Sundance, who I often quote you, he's speculating, but this is what he says. And I think it's interesting. He says, the U.S. media really, really, really need everyone to know that Justice Ginsburg is healthy. Here's the New York Times tweet. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is cancer-free and on the mend after her recent surgery for the disease. And then Sundance says, how far would the left-wing apparatus go to ensure that President Donald Trump does not have an opportunity to replace another Supreme Court justice? As far as needed. There are no boundaries too extreme on this issue. If the far-left political and institutional apparatus, including associates within the DOJ and FBI, were willing to work with allies in D.C. to frame an incredulous rape gang narrative against nominee Justice Kavanaugh, knowing that their allied media would incredulously push the most absurd claim imaginable. Well, enough said. Justice Ginsburg will be working, quote-unquote, from home invisibly for a year or more, even if in a coma, hooked up to breathing apparatus, and being force-fed through a tube. Watch. Now, that's speculation on his part, and that's kind of what he does. We don't know that, but I would just say, no, let me complete my reporting of what others are saying before I tell you what I think. This is an article, I think, from... I believe this is Breitbart. Rumors of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's imminent retirement are everywhere. Sebastian Gorka, former assistant to President Trump, says, two sources tell me that RBG, that's her little acronym, has left D.C. and is getting ready to announce her departure from the Supreme Court. He goes on to tweet, multiple sources tonight tell me this woman is not even in D.C. but in New York and preparing to step down from the Supreme Court. Are you ready for what will ensue? That was from Sebastian Gorka a couple of days ago. Now, here's an article from Ken Kukowski. You know, Sebastian, I know well. I also know Ken very well. But this is what Ken says. Politico spreads rumors on Ruth Bader Ginsburg leaving Supreme Court. Politico is basically trying to paint the picture that the White House is already preparing to replace her. They're trying to find people. And basically what Ken is reporting here is that there is no sign of that at all. A lot of the leaders in this particular lane, the ones that would be choosing a new justice or working on this, said that Politico had contacted them, but they made clear that the White House had not contacted them, and they had no reason to believe the Ginsburg rumors were true. So Politico's trying to make a story out of this, sort of inferring, of course, that the White House is, you know, walking on her grave already. That's what I think they're trying to do. Ken is saying, no, that not so fast. And there is a list already. There is an existing list of Supreme Court nominees. There's 23 candidates remaining, and there likely won't be any new nominations, even though Politico is reporting that President Trump is looking for other people. Ken says, regarding the justice's health, her medical team publicly stated that they believed the surgery was a complete success. Supreme Court Public Information Officer Kathy Arberg informed reporters on Friday her recovery from surgery is on track. So they've tracked this rumor down to a law clerk for Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who told a friend that Ginsburg would not be returning to the court. So there's only four clerks. They don't exactly know who that is. But Ken says, so while it is theoretically possible that Ginsburg plans never to return to the Supreme Court, the White House and Senate are unaware of any such plans and are not gearing up for another confirmation fight anytime soon. I don't know if I agree with Ken on that. I mean, not that the White House is gearing up for another fight yet. That part is, I believe, true if he says it. But when you look at the history of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and you look at her age and you look at her health history, it's very hard to imagine that a woman who's 85 could come back from this full strength. But it's also true that, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a rabid leftist. They're painting her as some sort of a champion. She's been a champion for nothing but abortion rights. She has done some horrid things in her career. And so, but she is so devoted to this that there's no way she would leave the court with Trump being president unless she were really sick and unable to perform her duties and had no choice. So my hunch is that the odds are that a woman this age would not recover from this. I might be totally wrong about that, but I sort of would be on the side of Sebastian, who has heard that she's not coming back. That would be my hunch. I don't know. I'm just telling you, this is my hunch that she's probably in more trouble than the New York Times wants you to know and others want you to know, and that's sad for her for sure. But it will open up. By the way, Lindsey Graham says he's hell-bent on filling next Supreme Court vacancy with a conservative justice. So it's going to get interesting. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.